Today we're wrapping up the series we've called The Battle, and I'm kind of summing up and giving an overview, so if this is your first minute here, this is great. You're going to get like six messages in one, but it won't take the time of six messages, so that's a good, this is the summary version, right? So this is the quick version, so we're just kind of review a few things, talk about some things, and kind of wrap it up at the end, talking about the battle that we go through, that we've all been going through, that we live in, and here's what we know. We've identified, we know what the problem is, and the problem is that we have this nature, we have needs, and we have pain, and it ends up with emotional disturbance. And the natures, we were born with this sin nature. We were born with this bent towards sin, a bent towards us, wanting us to have first place in our lives and everybody else's life. We were born with this selfishness. We didn't have to learn it. We didn't have to develop it. It came naturally when we were born. And we all recognize that, and everything's been damaged by sin, every relationship, every person, everything's been touched by sin and tainted by sin and is fallen and is in need of repair. There's nothing normal in this world. And so we like to think that we're normal. We think our lives are normal. The only normal person who lived was Jesus. He never sinned. He was born spiritually innocent, developed into spiritual maturity, never sinned. Although he had a divine nature, he also had needs, he had pain, but he never responded to them in a sinful way, never had emotional problem, was the healthiest person who ever lived. But we're not Jesus. We have issues. And so we have this nature, this sin nature, that continues to drive us towards sin, that we struggle with. And then we all have needs, and God gave us needs, and they're good. A need to be loved, a need to be respected, a need to be useful and use our lives for God's glory. So we have these needs, the need to have significant relationships around us and people who care and unconditional love. So we have these needs. The problem is we don't always respond to those needs in right ways. Because of this sin nature, it keeps pushing us towards ourselves. And so we fight to get our needs met in our way, whether it's right or wrong, and it causes pain. When our needs go unmet, it causes pain. Or when we try to meet our needs in wrong ways, it causes us pain. And it ends up in emotional disturbances. I mean, we all have problems. I'm not okay, you're not okay. Are you guys with me? And this is unavoidable. This is inescapable. We cannot be free from this anyway on this earth. We're born into it. It's the problem that we live with. But God has made a way for us to be healed in the midst of it, for us to live a healthy life in the midst of it. But it is a process. Sometimes God does heal us of things instantly, which I love when he does that. But most of the time, it's a day-to-day walk with him, left foot, right foot. And that's what the battle is about. It's a battle plan to help us live a healthy life that God intended in the midst of this sin nature that we deal with, in the midst of the needs that we have, in the midst of the pain that we experience, and in the midst of the emotional disturbances, issues that we face as we go through life. And this is what we've been talking about over the last 6 or 7 weeks or so. And so let's wrap this up this morning. If you go to my next slide. And so over the last several weeks, we've been talking about the plan. And the plan was to create your support team, that we all need a support team around us, to identify our weaknesses and learn how to allow God to change them into strengths. We've learned that we need to change our minds. We need to think differently. We need to master our emotions, and we need to let go of the past. So I want to visit each one of these a little bit and touch on each one of them as we just kind of review this and bring this to a close this morning and get ready for our mission month starting next week. So let's talk about the first one, creating your support team. We need to gather a support team. No one ever heals alone. We need people in our life. We heal in relationships. The weird thing is we get hurt in relationships, but we also heal in relationships. It's an interesting dynamic, I know. In the Bible, there's 58 times that it's written one another, how we need one another, to care for one another, to love one another. It lets us know that we need other people in our life. We need significant, meaningful relationships with others in order to heal, in order to grow and to mature. We need that support. And part of that support is having an accountability partner. And we'll talk about that. In James chapter 5, verse 16, it says, confess your sins to each other and pray for each other so that you may be healed. The earnest prayer of a righteous person has great power and produces wonderful results. Can you go to my next slide? Thank you. So what he's talking about here in James is he's talking about that, something happens when we confess our sins to somebody else, when we have a close friend, an accountability partner, somebody we can trust, somebody who is a follower of Jesus and is walking the road. Something happens, not just when we confess our sin to God, but when we also confide in somebody close to us that we can trust. I don't know how many times I've had a close friend that I can call and say, hey, this is what I'm struggling with today. Let me bounce off you what I'm feeling, what I'm going through, what I'm experiencing, and speak into my life, encourage me, and tell me, am I off here? Am I off? Do we have people in our lives that can speak into our lives? This becomes very important on our healing journey, having an accountability partner. If you go to my next slide, we had a list of people that should be on our team, our support team. We've got an accountability partner, should be a close personal friend who loves the Lord, is walking with God. We have the church that plays a part in that for sure. If you're married, your spouse plays a part in that. At times we need to go see a Christian counselor who can help us with the things that we're struggling with, somebody who specializes in the areas that we're struggling with. And of course, God plays a huge part in this process and on this team. And then the second part was finding strength and weakness. That we all have weaknesses. We have physical weaknesses, we have emotional weaknesses, we have relational weaknesses, we have financial weaknesses, intellectual weaknesses. Some of us have fashion weaknesses. I mean, there's all kinds of weaknesses out there. There's no shortage of weaknesses that we encounter in life. And the key is to find out, how do we make our weaknesses strong? How does God do that in our life? And we talked about 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 10, and Paul writing here, but he said to me, talking about God said to him, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. That since we were born, we've been learning to focus on our strengths and kind of hide our weaknesses. And we want to hide them, we want to deny them, we want to pretend like they don't exist. And then Jesus comes along, God comes along, and he says, you know what? I'm not going to use you in spite of your weaknesses. Actually, I want to use your weaknesses. Yeah, I'm going to use your strengths, but I'm also going to use your weaknesses, and I can turn your weaknesses into a strength. And so he says, I want you to get honest about your weaknesses with me, with those around you, and I want you to know that I want to work through your weaknesses. And he says, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. And Paul talks about this in this text, not about denying them, not defending them, not excusing them, not resenting them or trying to hide them, but allowing God to work through them. Something happens in our lives when we get serious about our weaknesses and say, being honest about them, say, God, here they are. Here's the good, the bad, and the ugly. Take it and do what you want. And God says, yeah, give me those weaknesses. I want to use those. And I can turn those weaknesses into a strength. My grace is sufficient for you. My power is made perfect in weaknesses. And Paul got to the point where he says, you know, we shouldn't just go to my next slide. He goes, don't just admit your weaknesses. Bring your weaknesses to Jesus and just lay them down at his feet. And he talks about even being grateful for our weaknesses. In this text that I was just reading from 2 Corinthians chapter 12, he talks about delighting in your weaknesses. If this is so counterculture, this is so against the grain of the world, he tells us to be grateful, to delight, to have pleasure in our weaknesses. When was the last time you found one of your weaknesses pleasurable, enjoyable, delight in it? We're glad you had that weakness. That does not come natural. But Paul was telling us from what God was telling him, to delight in your weaknesses, because that's a perfect place for God to show up. Because it's a weakness, it's not a strength. There's not much we can do about our weaknesses. And so God comes in there and uses our weaknesses and they become strengths. And then he talks about being willing to share. And that's what Paul was doing here. He was talking about his weakness and how God was turning his weaknesses into strength. In fact, the context of this letter, Paul had been talking about some of the super apostles that were claiming and boasting about how great they were. And Paul says, I would rather boast about my weaknesses rather than my strengths. That goes against the world. The world wants to boast about how good they are, how much they can do, how much they've accomplished, how much they have. And Paul says, I would rather boast about my weaknesses. He goes, yeah, I can boast about strengths. I can boast about what God has done through me, how he's used me. Oh, I could do that, but I would prefer to boast about my weaknesses. Something happens in us when we take this approach to our weaknesses. God changes our weaknesses into strengths. And then we talked about changing our minds, that part of the transformation process is when God changes our mind through renewing our mind on his word. Romans chapter 12, verse 2 says, don't copy the behavior and customs of this world, but let God transform you into a new person. How? By changing the way you think. One of the ways God changes us, one of the ways God transforms us into a new person is by changing the way we think. And when we start focusing our thoughts on God, on his word, and we start thinking about it, we start praying that, we start internalizing it, and we start, man, this is God speaking to me. It changes us from the inside out. And part of that process is changing how we think. We can think like the world and get the results of the world, or we can think like God and get the results of God in our life. Do we want our lives to be transformed? Do we want our lives to be more like him? Then it takes changing our thought process, focusing on his word. A lot of times when we come to God and we pray, we're praying, God, change my circumstances. And I think sometimes God is saying, I want to change the way you think more than I want to change the way your circumstances are going. And yes, he does want to change our circumstances, but he doesn't want us to continue thinking the same way we've been thinking. He wants to change the way we think. And so we spent a whole message talking about how God changes us. And we read Matthew chapter 4, verse 4, Jesus answered when he was being tempted by the devil, it is written, man shall not live by bread alone, but on every word that comes from the mouth of God. That we should live on the words that come from God. When we focus our thoughts, when we focus our minds on his word, he changes the way we think, he transforms our life, he changes our life. It sets us free from destructive thoughts, destructive thought patterns, and changes our life. And then we talked about emotions. How do we handle emotions? Go to my next slide. How do we handle emotions? We need to learn to master our emotions. Here's the interesting thing about emotions, is that God has emotions. God has moods, and yet he's not moody. How would you like that? To have moods and not be moody. I know the rest of us, we have moods, and sometimes we all get moody. God has moods, but he never gets moody. God has feelings. He has emotions, and yet without sin. And because we're made in his image, we have emotions. We have feelings. They're not bad. They're not wrong. They are our feelings. They are God-given, the good ones and the bad ones, the good emotions and bad emotions. We might break them out into two categories. But all of them are good and necessary for us. It's part of being made in God's image. It's part of the human experience. It's part of what makes us human is that we feel and we have emotions. And emotions are good. But here's the key to it. If you go to my next slide, here's the key is that feelings are real, but sometimes they're unreliable. And that's our problem. We think that every feeling is reliable. Not every feeling is reliable, but feelings are real, but not reliable. So we've got to be able to determine what feelings are reliable, what feelings are not reliable. What do we do with our feelings? How do we handle our emotions? Because not every emotion that we have is authentic. Not every emotion that we have is reliable. We can't. If we let our emotions run us, we are going to be run ragged. If we allow our emotions to dictate what we do, they are not dependable. You think about advertisers prey on our emotions. They prey on our feelings to get us to buy stuff. And we feel like we have to have it. So what do? We buy it. And then we have another emotion afterwards, right? Remorse. Because we bought, right? Buyer's remorse. We were emotionally tricked into it. And then afterwards, we have this other emotion that says, man, I made a mistake. Our emotions, our feelings are not reliable. And if we have a life where we're just following our emotions, we're going to live a miserable life. They are not reliable. Look at Proverbs 25, verse 28 says, like an open city with no defenses is the man with no check on his feelings. Man, we've got to put a check system on our feelings, or we're like a city with no defense. Anybody can come in and plunder the city. Our lives can be plundered because we are ruled by our emotions. And you know what? Our old nature plays off of our emotions very well. Oh, it plays off of our emotions very well. The two will work together just to drag us wherever they want to go. And it really becomes quite messy. I know we've all been there. We've all done it. So what do we do with our emotions? Well, let me give you a few things that we can do with them. If you go to my next slide. First thing is you got to touch it. You got to embrace your emotions that you have. They are unreliable, but they are real. The emotions that we experience are real. We need to learn to embrace it. We need to learn to reach out and touch it in a sense and say, this is part of the human experience. Even when we're experiencing anxiety or fear and emotions that make us very uncomfortable, they are real. The emotions are real and we need to embrace it. Sometimes we're afraid of it. Sometimes we just let it rule us. And sometimes we just need to look at it and say, hey, this is what I'm feeling. This is the reality of what I'm feeling right now. And it's okay. Having these feelings are okay. It's what I do with the feelings that either make them good or bad. So So having the feelings are okay. We need to reach out. We need to touch it. We need to embrace it. We need to go ahead and experience it. This is a part of being human. This is a part of being made in God's image, that we embrace this. We touch it. But we don't stop there. We don't just embrace it and just run with it. Second thing we do is we test it. We've got to test our emotions. We've got to test it. Go to my next slide. Test it. You got to test your feelings. You got to challenge your feelings. Don't automatically accept them. Don't automatically assume that they're accurate. We've got to test our feelings. Is it as bad as you think it is? Probably not. Is it as good as you think it is? Probably not. We need to test our feelings, all right? We just don't accept them at face value. David did this a lot, and that's what the Psalms are. There's a whole book written about our emotions. Every emotion that can be experienced is written in Psalms. And David wrote a lot about his Psalms and even opened himself up to God. God, talk to me about my emotions, what I'm experiencing, what I'm going through. And he did. He invited God into his emotions, into his feelings. Psalm 26, verse 2 says this, "Test me, Lord. Try me. Examine my heart." Right, examine my mind, test me in this. Help me determine what I am feeling, what I'm experiencing, God. Help me to determine, what do I do with these emotions that I am experiencing? And this is also where an accountability partner comes in handy, because you can share your emotions, you can share your feelings with a person and get some feedback on what you're experiencing and what you're feeling. Think about Elijah. There was a point in Elijah's life where he had been running for his life and he was discouraged, he was down, he was depressed, and he's crying out to God, and God comes to him and says, what's going on? Why are you so upset? He said, because I'm the only one left to defend your name. I'm the only one left that's living for you, God. All of them have given themselves over to the prophets of Baal. And God says, that's not true. That's not true at all. I've got plenty of people that are still part of this remnant that I have. And he was worried about something that wasn't even true. It was causing all kinds of negative emotions that he was experiencing. And the real issue was he was worn out, he was tired, and needed to rest. So God had ravens bring him food, he got rest, he got restored, his energy came back, and he went on with what God had planned for him. Our emotions, we need to test them. And then the third one is you've got to tame them. We've got to learn to tame them. What do we do? What do we do with our emotions? Well, one thing we do, we can change our emotions. Our emotions come because of the thoughts we've been thinking typically. So emotions come, we change our thoughts, we change our emotions. Sometimes the emotions that we have are so ineffective, so self-destructive, that we need to change them by changing the way we think. We can also channel them. You either change them or you channel them. You channel that emotion into something positive, something good. Let me give you an example. Anger is a great example. Anger is energy. When we get mad, it produces energy in us. Anger in and of itself isn't bad, but it's what we do with the energy from the anger. We can use it in a positive way. We can use it in a negative way. So when we channel anger into a positive way, we're trying to use that energy to fix the problem rather than fix the blame. Man, we're using it in a positive way. We can channel it in a positive direction. So we either change it or we channel it. Either way, we tame it. But when it comes to emotions, we need to touch them, we need to test them, we need to tame them and use them for God's glory. And then last week, we're wrapping up on let go of the past. Philippians chapter 3, verses 13 and 14 says, "Brothers and sisters, I do not consider myself yet to have taken hold of it, but one thing I do, forgetting what is behind and straining forward to what is ahead, I press on toward the goal to win the prize for which God has called me heavenward in Christ Jesus." We let go of the past and we start moving into the future. Sometimes holding on to the past sabotages our present and our future. Things that we have not let go of are hindering our relationships today, hindering our well-being today, and hindering our well-being and our relationships into tomorrow. Have we truly let go of the things in our past? A lot of times there's issues, circumstances, situations that we hold on to and continue to impact our lives as we move forward. If you go to my next slide, there's two in particular, let me mention: grudges and guilt. These are two big ones that we have a tendency to hold on to through our life from the past. And the interesting thing about grudges is something that I hold against somebody else because they've done something to me. And you know it when somebody's holding a grudge. I can talk to somebody and they start talking about a certain person from 20 years ago. And all of a sudden it's like it happened yesterday. What is that? That's a grudge. That person did something to them and they're holding on to it. If we don't let go of that, that taints every relationship that we enter into. Guilt. Guilt is what I hold on to because I hurt somebody else. I feel guilty for what I did. We hold on to that too. If we don't deal with our grudges and our guilt, it is going to sabotage our present and our future. The question is, who are you holding a grudge against? And who do you feel guilty about something you did to them? Grudges and guilt. Have we dealt with the grudges? Have we dealt with the guilt? What are we doing with that? How we respond is huge in our life. Even if we just take the guilt. Think about Judas and Peter. Peter denied Jesus 3 times, experienced guilt, but responded very well, came back to Jesus, had a conversation, was restored. Judas experienced guilt, moved into condemnation instead of conviction, went on to hang himself. 2 different ways of handling guilt, very different results, one healthy, one very unhealthy. How do we handle guilt? How do we handle grudges? It makes a difference on how our life goes. So let's wrap up with just 1 or 2 more verses and we're going to close. John chapter 8, verse 36. Here's what Jesus said. He said, if the Son sets you free, you will be free indeed. And this idea of freedom is a progressive freedom. Like I said at the beginning, I wish God would take all of our problems and just heal us instantly and we would just move on as if it was no big deal. I wish he would do that with all of the things that we struggle with, but he doesn't. Much of it is a progressive walk with him, walking out the battle plan, allowing him to change us from the inside out. But he says, so if the Son sets you free, you will be free indeed. Meaning as we go through this process, we become more and more free to live the life that God has called us to live. A freedom to say yes to the things we need to say yes to. A freedom to say no to the things we need to say no to. Because that typically is our problem. Sometimes we can't say no to the things we should say no to and we don't say yes to the things we should say yes to. But freedom is the freedom to say yes when we need to say yes and to say no when we need to say no. That is freedom. And that is the life that he's called us to live. Let me close with this verse. Romans chapter 7, verse 24 and 25. As Paul is writing here, talking about the battle, the struggle that he was going through. He writes this, oh man, what a miserable person I am. Who will free me from this life that is dominated by sin and death? And then he gives us the answer. Thank God the answer is in Jesus Christ, our Lord. The answer to the battle is not a book, it's not a program, it's Jesus. But Jesus also gives us a process by which we walk with him that he changes us from the inside out. Will you stand with me this morning as we get ready to close in prayer? And let me ask you a question as you go to my next slide. What's your next step this morning? We've talked about all of these over the last multiple weeks. Where are you at with creating your support team? Do you need to find a good friend that could help you? Or do you have some weaknesses that you really just need to turn over to Jesus? Or is there a stronghold in your mind that says, I just really need to focus on renewing my mind in Jesus and renewing my mind on his word so he changes the way I think? Or are there emotions that you're struggling with that you need to touch them, you need to test them, and you need to tame them? Or is there something from your past that you need to let go of so you can move on with your future? What is your next step this morning? I know for each one of us, it's a little bit different. But I imagine as you've been here listening to me speak, God has been speaking to you about what your next step is. And I would just encourage you to take that next step. I want my prayer teams to come down to the 2 corners, and maybe you need to come down here and just agree with somebody in prayer about what your next step is. Maybe you just need to tell somebody what your next step is, just an accountability thing. Tell somebody, this is what I'm going to start doing. This is my next step. And then seal it in prayer with somebody.